If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
Robert Mueller has 49 questions he wants to ask President Trump. Or, if you want to make it easier on yourself, just ask Trump one question and he'll give you 49 different answers.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth chats with Brian Koppelman and David Levine, the co-creators of the show Billions. Then, Brian and David continue the conversation backstage at Studio HG exclusively for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
Press were fixated on Michelle Wolf's performance Saturday in D.C. President Trump was giving one of his typically unhinged performances at a campaign rally. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. If you're someone who is offended by any of the jokes at Saturday's dinner, you might want to check out what the President of the United States had to say at his rally in Michigan on Saturday night. Trump delivered yet another deranged routine filled with insults and lies. He attacked everyone from the press to people who protest during the national anthem and at one point asked if there were any Hispanics in the room until he quickly transitioned to talking about Kanye West.
Today they say sources have said that President Trump... Sources. They never say who the source is. They don't have sources. They are very, very dishonest people. You watch Comey... And you watch the way he lies. Comey's a liar and a leaker. We defend our flag. And we honor our flag. And if others honored our flag, they'd be a lot better off, wouldn't they? Wouldn't they be a lot better off? Hispanic unemployment. Any Hispanics in the room? Hispanic? Nah, not so many. That's okay. And by the way, in all fairness, Kanye West gets it. He gots it.
Wait, did he say he gots it?
He gots it.
And you think I can't deliver my lines? You sound like you learned English from a Rosetta Stone CD narrated by Polly Walnuts. Also, I can't imagine why Hispanics wouldn't want to be at a Trump rally.
I call them the dumbest immigration laws anywhere on earth. If a person puts their foot over the line, we have to take them into our country. We have to let them go to come back to court in like a year. Only one problem. They don't come back. Okay, that's the end. Welcome to the United States. One of the reasons they do it is because the Democrats actually feel, and they're probably right, that all of these people that are pouring across are going to vote for Democrats. But we have to have borders, and we have to have them fast. And we need security, we need the wall, and if we don't get border security, we'll have no choice. We'll close down the country.
Close down the country? It's official. Donald Trump is gonna Radio Shack America. At one point, Trump even rambled on about his education policies, suggested he wanted to focus more on funding vocational schools instead of community colleges. And he told a weird story about how he maybe used to cheat in school.
These community colleges, they're wonderful, but nobody knows really what a community college is. When I was growing up, we had things called vocational schools. And I'd go to a school, and I'd be sitting next to a guy. I never looked at his papers because he didn't do well. And on the other side, I'd have somebody not too good.
I love how he thinks it's noble to say he didn't cheat, but only because he thought the other kids were dummies. Well, I got news for you, buddy. If the other kids in your class were stupid, that means you were probably also stupid. Seriously, can you imagine? Can you imagine leaning over and looking at Trump's American history test? And as if that all weren't bizarre enough, Trump also seemed to threaten a sitting U.S. Senator, John Tester of Montana, after Tester had publicly disclosed some of the allegations of misconduct against Trump's former nominee for Secretary of Veteran Affairs, Dr. Ronny Jackson. Trump implied that he knew secrets about Tester that he would reveal as revenge for Tester coming out against Jackson.
Tester started throwing out things that he's heard. Well, I know things about Tester that I could say, too. And if I said him, he'd never be elected again.
I love when Trump plays coy, like, I know something, but I'm not going to say it. What have you ever known that you haven't immediately said out loud? What are the few things? One of the very few things I like about Trump being president is I know aliens aren't real because if they were, he would never stop talking about them. I went to Area 51, and I know I shouldn't say this, but we have a tentacle man in a cage. And he hates it. Also, what could you possibly reveal about John Tester that would make him unelectable? That he called Mexicans rapists, colluded with the Russians, paid hush money to a porn star, mocked a disabled reporter, tried to ban Muslims, confessed to sexual assault, called African nation shitholes, defended Nazis, and doesn't know how to use an umbrella? Seriously. Look at Trump walk down the steps with his umbrella inside out. Hey, man, wherever you're holding that North Korea summit, you better hope it's not windy. That's not a way to start a tough guy negotiation. Mr. Kim, I think you'll find that unlike my predecessor, I'm no pusher. My umbrella! Oh, no, it's inside out. Oh, it's inside out. Oh, I'm getting wet and it's inside out. Well, while Trump was rambling like a maniac at yet another public therapy session, there were also major developments in the Russia investigation. On Friday, House Republicans released their report claiming to exonerate Trump, and Trump was not surprisingly ecstatic, bragging about the report during a meeting in the Oval Office with German Chancellor Angela Merkel.
We were honored. It was a great report. No collusion, which I knew anyway, no coordination, no nothing. It's a witch hunt. That's all it is. There was no collusion with Russia, if you can believe this one. She probably can't believe it. Who can?
Look at her face. That's the face you make when the person in front of you at Starbucks loses his and thinks you're gonna back him up. I said two pumps of mocha, and that was only one pump of mocha. This lady heard me. You heard me, right, lady? This will pass. Just ignore him. This will pass. And while Republicans used their report to run interference for the Trump administration, the Democratic response to the GOP report actually contained several major revelations. For example, there's that infamous meeting at Trump Tower, the one between Trump campaign officials, including Donald Trump Jr. and two Russians, promising dirt on Hillary Clinton. A footnote in the Democratic report just casually mentions that a Republican congressman who met with those same Russians years earlier, quote, acknowledged that they were probably spies. Hey, Democrats, how can you bury that information in a footnote? You guys are so bad at this. If Democrats ever find a smoking gun proving collusion, it'll be on the last page of an hour-long PowerPoint presentation, and everyone will be asleep by then. Did Trump collude with the Russians? Well, that brings us to Section 73 of Appendix D, which is this photo of Putin and Trump tandem skydiving. And, of course, while all of this is happening, Trump is also trying to negotiate a peace deal with North Korea. On Friday, the North and South took a historic step towards peace when leaders of both countries met and promised to eliminate nuclear weapons from the peninsula. And naturally, Trump wants credit for it. At the rally Saturday, his supporters even demanded that he been given the Nobel Peace Prize by chanting Nobel at him.
President Xi, he's a friend of mine, but he likes China. I like the USA, but he's a friend of mine. But you know what? He's been a great help on the border with North Korea, and a lot of good things are happening there. A lot of good things. I'm not going to give you what's going to actually happen because we don't really know. But I'll tell you one thing. We're not playing games, and I remember, you know, it was very rough 3-4 months ago. That's very nice. Thank you.
If there's any one thing I never would have predicted in a Donald Trump presidency, it's a crowd of his supporters chanting Nobel. That's like going to a monster truck rally and chanting Pulitzer. If Trump's rally reminds us of anything, it's that the media should spend its time challenging people in power and not acquiescing to them. Because if there's one thing you cannot say about our current president, it's that...
He got it.
This has been A Closer Look. Our guests are a very successful screenwriting, directing, and producing team. They are also co-creators and executive producers of Showtime's hit series Billions, which airs Sunday night. Please welcome to the show Brian Koppelman and David Levine, everyone. Welcome to the show, guys.
How are you?
It's great to see you. I've known you guys for a while. Brian, you've been on the show before. First time for you, David. You're off to a great start.
Thank you.
And I want to congratulate you guys. Found out that Billions got picked up for season 4. Congratulations.
Yes. Yeah, we're going again.
So, I have to ask, as a fellow writer, when you find out news like that, how quickly does the excitement of getting it picked up turn into terror about having to write it?
Oh, instantly.
Yeah,
in the same second. Are you kidding me?
You had no joy?
You get this moment of, I have a job, and that's yeah. Fantastic, and then it's like, oh, my God, I can't believe how much stuff we have to write now.
Yeah, also, I want to say that the first time that I was on the show, like I said, I did your test show, but then the first time I was on the show, that day we found out we were renewed. And then this time, we didn't come on now until the show's been on 6 episodes this season, and they told us, so next season, can I come on the day of the first episode?
Oh, yeah, of course.
And I can come on, and it's like, the show's renewed, and then we just know.
Yeah, then you know. Why'd you have to wait 6? That's unfair.
Yeah, she's not.
So I also want to ask about you guys meeting. Now, you've got worked together forever, yet you met in a place, I did not know this until just now, you met in the weirdest of places. You met in the Old West.
Oh, we did, yeah.
Where were you guys?
We were in Montana or Colorado or Wyoming.
There you guys. Yeah. How old? 16 and 14?
Yeah.
That was 1893.
Yeah. God. You went to Westworld and came up with Billions.
That's crazy.
But you were New York kids who went there?
We were. There were these trips out west called teen tours, and a bunch of students fly out west and then go see the sights.
Uh-huh.
And we were on this, and we thought it'd be a good idea to dress up like that. And you'll see the secret to our friendship in that picture there. You'll notice he's pointing the gun right at me.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I didn't know I was able to leave.
Andy's been drinking. Yeah, so that's a...
Oh, he's got the whiskey.
That's a bad combo.
We were cool, though.
Yeah. You seem like cool kids.
Yeah, that radiates.
When you came back to New York, did you still wear your chaps around, or...?
Everyone else on that thing were, like, outdoorsy people. They were good at things like camping.
Yeah.
And they knew how to talk to members of, like, the opposite sex. And, we like to read.
Yeah. Well, you found each other, and you obviously had a very successful career. The first screenplay you guys wrote together was Rounders. So that's 96. When's Rounders?
Yeah. Yep.
Fantastic film. Is it, you had the, who, which one you had the idea based on a poker game?
Well, all I know is I was sound asleep at 3 a.m. one night. My phone rings. I pick it up. It's him. He says, Dave, I just lost $750, and it was amazing.
Yeah.
You got to come see this place, Underground Poker Room. I said, sounds great. Let's do it.
Yeah, and we started going to this. I mean, I was playing a lot of poker back then.
And you don't say it like a guy who won a lot of poker back then.
But, I mean, I'm sitting here.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it worked out.
You know, it worked
out. He didn't meet his son until the kid was 2 years old.
No, but we would go and play all the time, and we would get these guys into conversations, and then usually he would sneak off in a corner and, like, write down something that they said. And we spent, like, a year and a half or 2 years going to these underground illegal...
Researching.
Yeah, poker clubs, researching.
I can't believe you didn't get your arms broken in an illegal poker club writing stuff down in the corner.
Yeah, that I would sort of, like, block, and then he would
yeah,
go
gotcha.
And write the stuff down. And a lot of the stuff... But you learn that... people, all they don't want is for you not to write it. They're so happy if you put them in. Mm-hmm. So, like, the guy, Joey Kanish in the movie, was a real guy named Joel Bagels. And we were nervous about it because, you know, it's not such a big change from Bagels to Kanish.
Yeah.
He might have recognized himself. but it was fine. He was so thrilled and telling everyone, you know, I'm really Kanish. I was like, no, you're Bagels. But, yeah.
I imagine this is the same thing, you're finding the same thing happening with billions, which is people in the finance world and people in the legal profession are probably
Absolutely.
Very happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in the beginning, all the hedge fund managers, these hedge fund billionaires, didn't want to have any association. So someone would come up to them and say, hey, is that character? And they go, no, definitely not.
They were almost threatening. They were like, you know, that's not me. I never talked to those guys.
I would never. And then as soon as, you know, Damian Lewis, pretty cool, is Bobby Axelrod. And suddenly Damian went to the U.S. Tennis Open after the first, you know, season. And five different hedge fund billionaires came up to him and like, you know, you're really playing me.
Yeah.
I'm Bobby Axelrod. And Damian kept texting us like, how many guys are Bobby Axelrod? I thought I was Bobby Axelrod.
The show's also popular with younger viewers. You guys all have kids. Do your kids think it's cool that you guys created billions?
Do yours?
I have three sons, 15, 12, and 9, and they don't watch the show or think I'm cool.
Wow.
No, so.
Like an active choice? Did they even try it, or did they immediately say?
I think the only time I get some credibility is if their teachers like it, and they think they might get some favoritism on the test.
See, yours are young, and so it's still okay that the teacher. My daughter Anna, who's here with me for Take Your Daughter, it's work day, which I didn't know that's what it was, but that's why I did it. She is mortified because I'm pretty active on Twitter, as you know.
Yeah.
And her teachers are all like, you know, your dad tweeted something really angry about Scott Pruitt the other day. And she's just like, really? I have to go to school and hear about your tweet.
I would hope you get some points for this. A lot of athletes really like billions. J.J. Redick, he actually wore an Axe Capital shirt and tweeted about how much he liked it. I think that's pretty cool. Dwayne Wade did you real solid. This is basically just a promo. Billions on Showtime. Love this show.
Love
Beautiful.
It. We
Thank
love
you.
It.
Yeah, what do you think it is? Because I know a lot of athletes are drawn to it. What do you think is the draw?
I think it's these young, super well-paid guys who want to call their own shots. They don't want to be beholden to people. And that's really what Bobby Axelrod is. He's like a rebel. He, you know, he's the smartest guy in the room and the richest. And they can relate to that.
I will tell you, you talking about all those people saying Axelrod is based on me. We named our kid Axel, and I called him Axe the other day, and somebody went, is that for billions?
Yeah.
And I'm like, come on. I know those guys, but I'm not going to name my kid after Axelrod.
We'll send you a onesie.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being here, guys. It's so great to see you.
Right,
Colin and David Levine, everybody. Billions here Sunday nights on Showtime.
Hi, everyone. It's Sarah. I'm late night. I'm backstage here with Brian Koppelman and David Levine, co-creators and executive producers of Billions on Showtime. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us.
So psyched.
And also, we have a special guest, Anna, Brian's daughter.
Hi.
It's bring your daughter to work day, which I didn't know. I just wanted her to hang out with me. I mean, she's 18, so I don't even know if it really qualifies.
I think I just wanted her to sit in to call out maybe anything you guys say that might possibly not
keep them honest. Yeah.
Keep everybody honest here.
Okay.
Fantastic. Don't keep us honest.
So what we didn't get to in the interview with Seth, but something that we had talked about prior to you guys coming out here, was the fact that some of the conversation in the show about Chuck Rhodes is his job and how that has become a more prominent job based on our world now. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, well, Chuck Rhodes is the U.S. attorney for the Southern District of New York, which is right in Manhattan. They focus on financial crimes, but really all crimes across the spectrum. And it's a super powerful, influential position, but it's also a presidential appointment. And then you get voted in through Congress, but the president basically names you. So our show started in the prior administration.
Right.
So the election obviously was noteworthy. People recognized it. So in Billions' world, we knew we had to deal with the fact that there was a new president, new administration in. And the presidents can, in some rare instances, keep the prior guy in. And so that's where our season picks up. This new guy named Jock Jeffcoat, who's a hardcore Texan, you know, right-wing type, is the new attorney general, and he's sitting with Chuck, sort of setting him straight on how they're going to want things to run this term.
And yeah, you're totally right that this thing that we were fascinated by in the beginning was the unfettered powers that a United States attorney has. And people didn't realize that this incredible discretion that the U.S. attorney's office has in terms of choosing what they want to prosecute
right. And
what they want to not prosecute. And so we had noticed that billionaires were like nation states and U.S. attorneys were like kings. And so we thought it was a construct that set up for sort of like a Shakespearean type of conflict. But what's happened now, of course, is that the world is now a Shakespearean, our country, farce. And comedy, a Shakespearean comedy, but the really dark kind of Shakespearean comedy. And the show absolutely reflects in a certain way the undercurrents. We're not specifically topical, but there's no way to avoid the fact that the world's a shaken.
I consider myself a person who watches the news. I don't think I would have known the U.S. attorney from the Southern District's name before, like, 2 years ago. That never would have really occurred to me.
Although if you read the financial pages, you would have. Like, which I know you do read the financial pages, but, well, but you know, there Preet did go after a lot of these people. And we were also fascinated by the fact that many men mostly used these prosecutorial positions for their own aims. So they were doing the public good, but really they were doing good for themselves.
Like Rudy Giuliani held that office back in the day.
And,
long
and
before.
That was when Comey worked for him, right?
Chris Christie held that office too in New Jersey. Yeah. And so different, and you know, Spitzer was prosecutorial, though not in the same exact job, and Cuomo was a prosecutor. And so we were looking at how this kind of advancement happens by partially what you choose to go after. And so now you see the political in the world, how the political interests and then the interests of justice are sometimes commingled, sometimes entirely separate, sometimes set in opposition. Mm-hmm. And so it does set, to us, it just set up for drama in a really clean and clear way.
You guys also film at some really specific locations, which I think has been great. Like the fun thing too, I think living in New York is you see restaurants that people go to and people love. How involved are you in making those decisions in terms of like picking specific places you want acts to be eating at or have a party at?
100% involved. Couldn't be more involved. It's actually a huge pull of attention. It's a major topic. Brian's a massive foodie type, knows tons of chefs. I've been to plenty of these restaurants in tow with him. And another guy on our staff is, I'd say, is big a fan of that kind of thing. So we talk about where they go. You know, these restaurants are signifiers in New York.
Right.
You know, can you get in? What table do you get? They sort of cement your status in the public eye. And Axe is trafficking around in that.
And because chefs are now people in the culture in a big way.
Celebrities in their own right,
In the last episode that aired, Bobby Axelrod goes and eats at Danielle, Restaurant Danielle, and Danielle Belude is in the scene. And Danielle is a huge fan of the show and so opened his restaurant to us to do it. And you see that Axe has bought out the restaurant. And that just and that Danielle's there personally serving him. And that just tells you a lot. And then as much as we like it for the drama of the show, also that day, Danielle was like, would you guys like to eat maybe a white truffle omelet? I'll make it myself. And you'll come sit in the skybox above the kitchen and we will eat together. And it's like, that's a nice perk.
Yeah.
Also, it's amazing. You know, we're so lucky to get to make this show. We can't even believe we get to like, you know, tell this story now in the world, get to be really ruthless in the way we tell it, and then get to be hypocrites and eat Danielle Belude's truffled eggs.
Anna, does your dad take you to any of these restaurant places?
We go to these places and have some fun,
What's been your favorite one that you've gone to or memorable one?
My brother and one of his best friends, when they were in high school and I was in middle school, or maybe I was in elementary school and they were in middle school, they forced me to eat Mama Fuku pigtails. And from that moment on, it became a favorite food of mine.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought another thing that is funny that I just thought of when you said about access and status was Wags' obsession with getting on Raya. That was just like so funny to me because people have had those conversations here at work and like text
messages.
Are you on
Raya?
I mean, I was.
What's the next
thing? Are you on Tinder Select now? No, don't cut it out. You cannot just cut it out.
But it is like a very much a thing where people will
Why'd
ask you.
Why'd you leave
you,
Raya?
There's a certain type of person that's on it.
Like Wags.
Like Wags. There's a lot of red carpet photos.
Right. Oh, really? Oh, people trying to show you their status?
Yeah, like he was like, you know, get in the picture. You show the picture of yourself with the Porsche in the background or, you know, whatever it is.
So do you want to tell how that, without naming her, how we got that? Do you remember?
I remember, yeah. We, you know, there are a lot of younger people. Some of them are single, you know, working around the show.
Yeah.
And they were talking about this.
And one girl was arguing with another girl that she should be on Raya. If you're on Raya, I should be on Raya.
Right.
And we are writers. We walk by, we're like, wait, what is this? We have to know every single thing.
And they told us all about it. And we heard how you had to have certain celebrity endorsements in order to get on. And we thought, this is what a rich finance guy would really want.
This
the kind of thing you can't buy.
Yeah. This young woman
who's amazing, was an Ivy League grad who had danced for Alvin Ailey and had been the girlfriend of an Academy Award winning screenwriter director. And we were like, so then it must have been a layup for you. And she goes, well, I had to call him to write a letter on my behalf. Because after we broke up, he was on. And I was like, listen, as a final parting thing, could you get me on? As soon as we heard that story, we're like, we have to.
Yeah, that's so funny.
We have no choice.
I thought it really went so well with the idea of status and what people care about and, you know, what those certain things mean, eating at the right restaurant and being on this dating app and what all those things say about you.
Yeah. Well, we always try to figure out what drives these people once they get past 100 million or 500 or even 1 billion. Like, why do they keep going? What drives them? And there are a lot of different answers to that question, but one of them is definitely access.
Yeah.
They want to be relevant and they want to be able to get to where they want to go, where other people can't go.
Right.
And that makes them feel a certain way about themselves.
Lastly, for season 4, I know you guys it's in your head, but is there any guest stars or people that you've locked in or you can tell us about or that you really want to join
you?
No,
but we
could
say that we're about halfway through this season, but in the back half of the season, John Malkovich is coming on and playing Russian billionaire.
Okay. That's like a Rounders reunion.
Of sorts, yeah.
A little bit.
And he is playing a Russian as he did in our first movie, Rounders. A different character, but we did give him a couple of the words that Teddy KGB says. It's possible that John says him as Grigor Andelov, this character.
A sort of callback to...
Just a little Easter egg for people.
Great, great, great. I love it. Well, thanks so much for being here. And Anna, thank you for joining us.
Of course, they seem to be very honest.
Good,
so
glad.
I can approve it.
Fact checker over here.
Yeah.
Thanks so much,
Kid
guys.
Approved.
Thanks, Seth.
Thank you.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle @LateNightSeth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.